From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Welcome to Current Sports. Yes, it is 1 o'clock, folks. That favorite time of your day, I hope. We have a great show in store for you. As always, I'm your host, Al Martin. It is January 8th, folks. Hump Day, Wednesday, and we have a stacked show for you. Of course, we're going to talk about that incredible game last night at the Breslin Center. Michigan State and Ohio State duking it out like two heavyweight champions. Oh, man, it was great. We're going to definitely dive into that game and discuss that in just a second. Did you guys see Dennis Rodman on CNN yesterday? If you haven't, it is one of the weirdest, most disturbing, awkward interviews you'll ever see. Especially from an athlete's perspective. Of course, Dennis Rodman, he's such a huge advocate for North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, who they've developed this weird kind of best friend type relationship. And Rodman actually gathered a group of former NBA players to go over to North Korea and play a friendly basketball game, I believe, which took place yesterday. And get this, I mean, after all this talk and the hoopla around it, U.S. loses. They lost to North Korea last night, or yesterday, excuse me. Interesting stuff there, but if you haven't seen that interview, it really sparked a discussion that, you know, we talked about here prior to today's show, and we're going to bring it to you. We're going to talk about athletes in the world of politics. And should they be involved in politics? And we're going to talk about some of those who have had success in the world of politics and those who haven't, and you're going to get our take on it. It's our Barbershop Wednesday segment, and we want to get your thoughts on it. You can pick up that phone and give us a call, 517-355-9527. Of course, there are countless athletes who have tried to make their stamp in the world of politics and tried to get involved with heated political discussions. I mean, of course, Muhammad Ali. We can go back to, you know, the days of Muhammad Ali when, you know, the Vietnam War, and he, you know, took a stand and said that he's not going over there to fight for America in the Vietnam War. He made a who could forget that political stand? Of course, you know, now with Dennis and the North Korea relationship here, I could go to keeping it really, really local to my hometown of Detroit with Dave Bing, who is now the mayor of, well, was the mayor of Detroit, and his ties there. But, you know, just athletes and politics, we're going to dive into it and give you our thoughts on it and this whole Dennis Rodman fiasco that's taking over the media stream waves. Again, give us a call, or you can comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Again, that number is 517-355-9527. Before we dive into Barbershop Wednesday, we have a lot to talk about, including a game to remember for any Spartan fan who watched or braved the cold weather to attend last night's battle of top five teams last night. Let's dive right into it. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this January 8th, 2013. Ohio State and Michigan State gave us all one fantastic show last night. The Spartans ended up topping the Buckeyes 72-68 in OT. Keith Appling made a tie-breaking three-pointer with 29 seconds left in overtime and finished with 20 points, 7 assists, and 6 rebounds. AP Adrian Payne was just a man. He had 18 points and 6 rebounds, and Gary Harris chipped in 13 points. However, it was a bittersweet victory for the Spartans, seeing as though, folks, they blew a 17-point lead, allowing the Buckeyes to push back into the game and push it to the brink. Aaron Kraft was great in it. We're going to dive into it in just a sec. Matt and Alex are going to join me. Again, if we want to give your get your thoughts on that game last night, it was a great game and had me glued to my computer. Okay, I was watching the game on my computer, not my TV, because I was here editing for a Rose Bowl special, which we'll get to in just a sec. But give us a call, 517-355-9527, and give us your thoughts on that game. During halftime of Michigan State's win over Ohio State on Tuesday night, the Spartans football team was honored for their Rose Bowl winning season. And during the ceremony, Center Travis Jackson, he led this chant.
I want everyone in here, So everybody get down, everybody get down. Yes!
Yes! Oh, what a moment at the Breslin Center last night at halftime. That was center Travis Jackson rocking the mic, leading the entire Breslin Center Arena into the Yes chant. Of course, Michigan State coming off that historic Rose Bowl win over Ohio State. It was a moment that really just sends chills up your spine. And that's the true essence of college sports right there, folks. The chant, yes, if you're doing a little history lesson here, the chant was made popular by WWE wrestler Daniel Bryan, if you remember. Even if you're not a wrestling fan, no, that chant is still pretty cool. All right, folks, this just in. This is breaking news, and I'm just receiving Pat Narduzzi. Of course, he is he interviewed with Louisville. Pat Narduzzi actually interviewed with Louisville, among, of course, the top candidates for the Louisville head coaching opening. But this just in, right during that bite, I got this on my iPad from CBS Sports. They're reporting that Bobby Petrino will be named Louisville's new football coach. Right now, folks, that's what's being reported. It looks as though Pat Narduzzi is safe, folks. Okay, again, just being reported. Just got this just in on my iPad, folks. CBS Sports is reporting that Bobby Petrino will be named Louisville's next coach. Okay, next football coach. Michigan State, of course, defensive coordinator Pat Narduzzi, among one of the top candidates for that job. I think, folks, we can put it to bed, at least according to that report. We're still going to confirm it as this, as we go here on Current Sports. But that's what I'm receiving right now. So I know many of you are wiping your brow. You know, take a chill pill, folks. Looks as though Narduzzi will be staying for right now, okay? Okay, some sad news when we talk about local sports around the mid-Michigan area. Owosso football and boys track and field coach Tom Harkema, he passed away Monday after a brief bout with cancer. Now, Harkema coached the football team in the late 90s and from 2010 to 2013, serving as an assistant during the years in between. He helped lead Owosso to their second ever playoff appearance and first playoff win in 2012. He also coached the track and field team for 17 years. Now, in an email to the Owosso staff, Superintendent Andrea Tuttle, she quoted Harkema's wife, Sue, who said, quote, "I would like to recognize and honor the passing of my loving husband, Coach Tom Harkema, on January 6, 2014. Tom and I would like to give thanks to everyone for continuously providing their warm thoughts, kind words, and heartfelt prayers during this difficult and unexpected time. Please remember, there is a lesson to be learned through all the suffering. Never take anything for granted. This is what Tom and I were always striving to demonstrate during our time together. In memory of Tom, an athletic scholarship will be established to be granted annually." That was sent from Tom's wife, Andrea Tuttle. That's Andrea Tuttle quoting Harkema's wife, Sue, in a statement that she released to the Owosso staff. "Our hearts, thoughts, and prayers go out to the entire Harkema family. The passing of Owosso football boys track and field coach Tom Harkema passed away Monday after a battle with cancer." All right, going to some Tigers news now. The Detroit Tigers have re-signed shortstop Jose Iglesias for 1 year, $1.65 million. Iglesias, who came over to the club in a mid-season trade from the Boston Red Sox, finished second in AL Rookie of the Year voting. Iglesias hit .259 with two home runs and 10 RBIs in 46 games with the Tigers and is known for his eye-popping defensive prowess at shortstop. He is unbelievable, folks. All right. Pistons and Knicks, my Pistons just cannot get it together. Despite a furious late-game rally, the Pistons fell to the Knicks 89-85 at Madison Square Garden last night. The Pistons trailed by 15 heading into the fourth and cut the lead to one before ultimately running out of gas. Carmelo Anthony paced the Knicks with 34 points, including 13 in the third quarter. Josh Smith had 21 and 12 boards for Detroit, who have dropped seven of their last eight games, and Josh Smith had one, terrible. It'll be on the not type 10 on ESPN, I'm sure. Just one terrible air ball last night that made the airwaves left and right. Okay, Lions interview Kubiak. Gary Kubiak interviewed with the Detroit Lions today. They have already interviewed Jim Caldwell and are expected to interview Mike Munchak as well. Ken Whisenhunt is still the Lions' favorite. Red Wings in the Olympics. As much as the Red Wing season has been disappointing at times thus far, six Detroit Red Wing players were named to Sweden's Olympic roster. They include goalie Jonas Gustafsson, defenseman Nicholas Cronwall, and Johan Eriksson, and then forwards Henrik Zetterberg, Daniel Afridsson, Johan Franzen, goalie Jimmy Howard. He will represent the USA. Pavel Datsyuk will play for Russia, and Tomas Jurco and Tomas Tatar will play for Slovakia. All right, and in other news, Aaron Hernandez, documents released by the court yesterday show that former Patriot receiver Aaron Hernandez was a suspect in a Boston double homicide from 2012. Hernandez remains jailed due to the murder of former football player Odin Lloyd, and they actually have surveillance cameras that are linking Hernandez to the death of Lloyd. So there you have that. Before we wrap it up, I believe we have a caller on line one. DJ, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Happy New Year, Al. How you doing?
Happy New Year, brother.
Good. I just wanted to chime in on the condolences to the family, to the Harkemer family. Tom Harkemer was one of my coaches when I played at Western Michigan University back in the 80s.
Right.
Yeah, great person, great man. I didn't know he was in the Lansing area. I've been there for a few years and happened to see him about 2 years ago against East Lansing game, and he looked fine. I couldn't tell you if there's any issues at all, but you know how things happen. So I wanted to send my condolences to the family and all the coaches who've been touched by him, who knows him. He's a good coach and a good man, a better person than a coach. So those are always the accolades you like to know after your passing.
Hey, thanks a lot, DJ. Really appreciate that. And, of course, if you're just now tuning into Current Sports, Tom Harkema, Owosso football and boys track and field coach, he sadly passed away on Monday after a brief bout with cancer. Thanks a lot, DJ, for calling in. I'm sure Tom, he touched many lives throughout his coaching stint here in the mid-Michigan area. And I tell you, cancer is certainly a tough one. Actually, my grandfather, he passed away. The light of my world, man, he passed away in 2011 after a bout with cancer. It is a heinous disease, and you know, we really, our thoughts and prayers go out to the Harkema family. All right, well, folks, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, you can call in at 517-355-9527 and share what's on your noggin, okay? You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. All right, well, let's dive into this Michigan State and Ohio State game. It was a battle, folks, last night. I'm joined by Matt Lutke and Alex Sharg. We're going to dive into this thing, and it was a interesting game, just to say the least. You know, watching it, first of all, I'm a little salty today because I'm sitting in my office, I'm editing for the Rose Bowl special, which will be airing tomorrow night. Yes, it is. Today's Wednesday. Tomorrow night, 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. You don't want to miss it. Make sure you DVR it and flock to your television to see it. But I've been slaving over this thing. Didn't leave the office till about 1 or 2 a.m. last night. And, you know, I took an L and did not go to the MSU and OSU game. But I watched it on my computer. And I'm sitting there saying, man, I wish I was there right now. The atmosphere was off the chain. And many fans showed up. And it was a battle, folks. First off, guys, to dive into this thing, I want to get this off my chest. I want to harp on the bad out of that game. When you look at it from an MSU's perspective. MSU, I think, played great about two-thirds of that game, guys. Then things started to get sloppy. Overall, though, I think it was a sloppy game on both ends. If you look at OSU, I mean, MSU forced them into 21 turnovers, I believe. MSU, of course, gave up a 17-point lead. It was 55-38 at one point, folks. OSU got timely. What allowed OSU, I think, to get into this ball game was that Ohio State got timely defensive stops and easy transition buckets. There were many times where they got some great stops on penetration drives where they swiped the ball, got steals, and immediately That led to transition buckets down the floor, easy layups. We saw a dunk. Sam Thompson has hops out of this world, by the way. But, you know, that's exactly what sparked MSU. MSU looked totally lost offensively at one point in that game, and OSU capitalized. Again, I got to harp on this because it's something I mentioned yesterday, and I thought Brandon was going to come out and prove me wrong, prove me right last night. Brandon Dawson totally went ghost. Peace out. I'm out of here. And we saw an irate Tom Izzo pretty much throughout that entire game, but we saw an irate Tom Izzo on Dawson's case left and right, and deservingly so. Guys, I think Brandon Dawson, in my opinion, is too athletic and too skilled to go in the second half and not have one rebound. He had four rebounds in the first half, not one single rebound, totally went ghost from the game in the second half. I think that's totally inexcusable, and I think that's one of the biggest reasons that allowed OSU to come back in that game. Aaron Kraft, he may not be a scorer because we didn't see him score much, but that's not what he does. He is a pest defensively, and we saw that last night. Aaron Kraft showed up big. You had the big three-point play, that layup to bring him within three, and then you saw the knock off the butt on Adrian Payne for the easy lay-in. Not to sound cliche, but Aaron Kraft is pretty crafty, and he plays really, really hard. Mad respect to him because, you know, looking throughout that game, there was a point in that game, guys, where Aaron Kraft got really, really frustrated with his teammates when MSU started to pull away. And there was a moment, in Tirico and the other announcer, they mentioned it, that Aaron Kraft tried to rally the troops and say, hey, guys, let's talk about this. And his teammates wasn't having it. They were like, man, skip this. You know what I mean? When I heard that, I'm like, okay, MSU's got him now. OSU is totally out of this game mentally, and nothing is going to happen here. But, you know, somehow, some way, they got back in the game. And right now, guys, I'm really, if there's anything, just one more point I want to make on the bad of this game. I'm really worried about the long-term health of this Spartan team. We saw last night, Adrian Payne didn't start due to the sprained foot. Travis Trice was out with an illness. Keith Appling cramping up. They got to stay healthy, guys. If they stay healthy, this is a team that's going to make a lot of noise come tourney time, but they got to stay healthy. But to harp on that, I just wanted to make those points on the bad. I'll get into the good a minute after you guys share your thoughts. Go ahead.
Well, as far as my bad, it was like they got to 55 and then stopped playing.
Exactly.
It was like they thought the game. I don't think they thought the game was over, but they certainly thought, okay, this is time to start winding things down. And when you get super conservative, and at the same time the opponent starts to ratchet up the pressure because Ohio State goes to a little full court, it wasn't, you know, on the ball press, but they were providing pressure. They pushed MSU back.
Right.
And instead of running the regular sets, MSU's trying to run the weave, the three-man weave, and it's getting destroyed, blown up,
exactly.
Just about every time. It seemed like every possession, the shot clock's at 10 before they start actually moving the ball and trying to get an open look. And, you know, doing those things while the opponent is trying to increase the pressure and start to get the game to go a little bit faster was disaster. And it
right.
seemed like once they lost it, they were not going to get it back. You have to give big props to Keith Appling and Adrian Payne for that last-second play in regulation.
Oh, yeah.
Even though Appling was the one who turned it over, he didn't give up on the play, got back on defense, you know, tips the shot a little bit, just enough, and then it barely gets off the rim, and Payne sweeps it out of the way. Because that would have been one of the toughest losses for Tom Izzo and Spartan Nation to take had they blown that lead and lost in regulation.
Yeah, and I actually tweeted out when that moment happened, and we saw, who was it on the front? Was it Thompson? Or
who was coming
remember.
To clean it up?
No, Thompson was coming to clean. Who was on the break on that play? Was it Williams? I can't remember who it was.
Shannon Scott?
Yeah, I think it was.
It was Scott. Okay, when that happened, I tweeted out. I thought the game, and it flashed in my head. I thought the game was going to end on a game-winning dunk.
Yep.
That's what I thought. I'm sitting there like, oh, it's a wrap now.
Like
he's
NBA
in the clear.
NBA Street where the rim just blows up. Like it would have been.
Exactly.
It would have been. Yeah.
It would have been epic.
You.
It would have been epic.
And then they had three more chances. They had three more chances to score.
Yeah, they did. They did. And you know the thing about it is, like, that's a good point. I mean, because Keith Appling, if there's been anybody so far this season that's been consistent, and I call him Mr. Consistency so far this season, it's Keith Appling. Every single game, he's out there busting his butt, playing hard, scoring when they need buckets. He's been great this season. I have no quarrels with the way Keith Appling has played. And last night, not giving up on that play, that was the key, or else that it would have been game over, you know. And Adrian Payne, of course, because there was a second attempt at that missed dunk try by Scott, and Adrian Payne came up and totally demolished that notion too. So it was great on that. Alex, go ahead, man.
Yeah, I mean, both of your points are great so far. The fact that they stopped playing at 55, I was just shocked because in that last break, you figure that everyone's going to be running up the floor. After Shannon Scott missed that layup, they had two more offensive rebounds and two more chances. And then the only person rebounding, I think, was Adrian Payne. Like, no one crashed the boards. It's like they completely gave up on the last play of the game. It was the last play. So, other than that, Kaminsky coming up huge with a couple threes. Yeah, I thought that was a difference
for
me.
That's on my good list.
Yes. But other than the bad, you guys hit all the points. Just the turnovers. How about the fouls? Denzel Valentine with five fouls. Yeah.
Speaking of Denzel, did you see Tom Izzo totally get into him, grab his jersey? Now, you know what? We've all seen Izzo mad, very, very mad. But last night, it seemed as though it was another level of mad. You know what I mean? I've never seen Izzo grab a player like that. You know, just straight up, come here. You know what I mean? And pull him towards him. That was another level of frustration. With Tom Izzo, and I had never seen that before. And
now, do you think part of that is because maybe Izzo had kind of said, or I don't know if he told them to take their foot off the gas? Surely he didn't say that, but right. Maybe he was also thinking this game is over. We got to start running the clock. And then as this comeback's happening, guys are compounding mistakes with more mistakes.
Oh, yeah. That's frustration
and then he just
building up.
Yeah. I mean, him and Thad Mata were competing for who had the redder face.
Right.
I think Thad still wins, but man, Izzo was angry.
And, oh, did you see the halftime interview with Allison?
Oh, that poor girl.
Oh, my. I think that was her first half covering a Big Ten game because Tirico kept bringing it up. And, Izzo was just – because he was mad about the foul on
the non-foul,
on the non-foul on the, you know, with Kraft and Appling. But, oh, man, Izzo, it seemed like it was turned up to another notch. But going back to my good – I'll go start harping on my good list. The Spartans got timely shooting. That's something that, you know, they can say they've done so far this season very, very well. Appling, you know, hit that huge three, as mentioned at the top of the show. And you had Adrian Payne, who is a great – Adrian Payne is going to be a great NBA player, guys, because he can take you inside, outside. He's got the size. The two putback dunks were just unbelievable. Unbelievable. His effort, I mean, even with the sprained foot, Adrian Payne brings it. That he's a man. He's a man. So I gotta harp on that. And Kenny Kaminsky, as you just mentioned, Alex, he can – that kid can shoot. He's going to be great for MSU down the line. I mean, he showed his touch, you know, last night that, you know, he can drain it if left open and with a hand in his face too. He's a great shooter. That's what he was known for coming out of high school. He's going to be a great addition for the team this season. The Buckeyes having 21 turnovers. That's that MSU defense, man. They clamped down when they needed to in certain instances. They did let up on the gas, you know, during that comeback by OSU. But forcing the Buckeyes into 21 turnovers – as mentioned last week, Aaron Kraft didn't have one turnover. And now, you know, look at a 21 turnover night. That's something that, you know, you got to put the star on the badge there. Adrian Payne, as I mentioned, and Keith Appling, if he keeps on playing the way he is one special player. You can argue that he's probably the most – in my opinion, I think he's the best point guard in the nation right now with the way he's playing, I think. He's the most important point guard in the nation, I think, right now. So
he's certainly up there, and he's played well all year. And while he does have games here and there where he struggles shooting the ball, it's never those games where he is just completely gone.
Right.
You know, he's never kind of like Dawson was last night, where he's just kind of – he's a ghost. He's, you know, ghost protocol out there.
Exactly.
And Dawson was like that, and Valentine mentally was like that. I don't know what he was doing.
I don't know.
For most of the game.
Yeah.
The dunk attempt that he blew.
Yeah,
and then
Aaron
he gets the rebound
–
and throws the ball away right into an Ohio State guy's hands. It was just...
Yeah, bad.
I mean, there is a reason that Tom Izzo was so angry at him, and it's because he wasn't in it mentally.
Right.
It's frustrating to watch.
It is.
And back to the matchup, but when we were talking about this yesterday, it was Appling versus Kraft. Who was going to come out? I think Appling came out on top. Mm-hmm. It was Kraft at the end of the game, the Michigan State mishaps, that let Kraft kind of control that and get that upper edge towards the end. Mm-hmm. But overall, I think Appling was the clear leader in terms of that matchup.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. And I think that Aaron Kraft, though, I mean, he showed some glimpses that the kid is just tough. He's a tough kid. I mean, I remember that play, to really salvage the game for him where everybody was scrapping for the loose ball and he comes out of nowhere and dives on the thing and gets the timeout. I go back to that moment. That's just pure heart. That's wanting it. You know what I mean? And that's something that, you can never question Aaron Kraft's heart because he does those little things, those pesky little things that gets on your nerves and in the end can be the difference between winning and losing. So hats off to Aaron Kraft. He did what he needed to do. It just came up a little short there. An incredible comeback from them. But overall, like you said, when you go back to Denzel Valentine, just make a point about that. I mean, when Izzo lit into him, it was off of that little fancy behind the back, that and one type of thing he tried to do, and it went out of bounds. And then the timeout came, and there was a quote released today from the post game that they asked about Izzo, getting into Valentine like that. And he said, he doesn't like that fancy crap. You know what I mean? And he got into him. That's exactly what he told him. I don't like that fancy crap. What are you doing? Get on the bench. Tom Izzo, he tells it like it is. You know what I mean? So, hey, if you want to call in and share your thoughts, again, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You know the number. Just give us a call and share your thoughts on that MSU and OSU battle. It was an entertaining game, though, guys. Oh,
and is it just me, or was it like the refs were almost absent?
Yeah, you're right.
For all the talk early in the season about how, oh, man, there's going to be a lot more fouls. Games are going to take forever now. Mm-hmm. There were hardly any whistles. They were letting everything go on both sides of the floor, and that's part of the reason the coaches were so upset. But at least it was consistent. They were just going to let everybody do it. I mean, it wasn't like one team was getting every ticky-tack call. It was just, we're going to let you play till the very end, and they did. And I think there's credit there, but some of them, holy cow, it got ugly.
It did. It got really, really ugly. And you know what? And looking at that game, too, funny you mentioned that, because looking at just the dynamic of the game, I think guys are starting to get used to the whole hand check rule, because you saw a lot of times when Adrian Payne would post up, hands are up now. There's no arm bar there anymore. They're starting to get used to the rule, and it's going to be interesting to see if how really ingrained this rule becomes, and maybe it could. I hope it goes to the NBA. Maybe if it keeps on like this, because I think it's. And I was a big component. I was a hater on it at first. But now I'm starting to maybe see some progress in as far as making the game better. I don't know. It's still early, though. I'm not fully convinced with it.
Sounds like a debate topic.
That's another debate topic. But I saw some glimpses last night. Okay, this could be good for the game. I don't know. All right. Well, let's take a break. When we come back, I want to give you another sneak peek into our current sports TV Rose Bowl special that airs tomorrow night, 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. In just a sec, you're going to hear from a man who was in charge of making sure that the MSU alum who made the trip from Michigan to Cali got there safely and were taken care of. Yes, Scott Westerman of the MSU Alumni Association. Hear how him and his staff did it, along with a pretty cool story about the Michigan Go Blue skywriting that happened earlier this season. Yeah, you all remember that moment. Keep it locked. Current Sports is coming right back.
I'm Robin Young. Next time on Here and Now, in Whitesburg, Kentucky, a community radio station is helping residents send special messages to loved ones behind bars.
Hey, Uncle Eric. It's Brayden. I hope you're doing good. My mom is doing good. Love you.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
That's Here and Now, coming up at 2 p.m.
Hi, I'm WKAR radio station manager Peter Worf. WKAR is your hometown station for mid-Michigan news, people, and places. And if there's a story you think we should be covering, an issue we should discuss, or a person to pay attention to, we'd like you to tell us. Find us at currentstate@wkar.org, on Twitter at @KARCurrentState, and on Facebook. Around mid-Michigan and across the state, the WKAR network is here for you on 90.5 FM, AM 870, and WKAR.org.
Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Again, if you haven't heard, it's being reported by multiple sources that Bobby Petrino will be named as Louisville's next football coach for this upcoming year and from years to come. I want to ask you guys, Matt and Alex, right now, this being reported, I guess Narduzzi is pretty safe for now, huh? I don't know. I don't think that Louisville job is pretty intriguing.
For now. For now, Al.
For now.
For now.
For now. We'll see. I'm wiping my brow right now because I was pretty worried. I mean, thought he was going to take it if they offered it to him.
That's a good job.
That's a very
good
job.
They're going to the ACC.
Oh, yeah.
They're a big-time program. They've gone to BCS games in the past.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the jobs that you could definitely see him going and not be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe he went to Louisville. That's a quality gig.
Quality, yeah. It's been a springboard for many coaches.
Exactly.
You know
what I mean? Last guy goes to Texas, and guy before that went to the NFL, and I mean, they produce some talent there.
Exactly.
The other part of it is Bridgewater going pro. He's going to have that rebuilding. It's not like he's getting launched in like he would for the Lions, where he had a great team behind him. No, he has to Louisville has to bring a brand new quarterback with him as the head coach.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like he's going to just be on defense.
Right.
He'll be manning both forces. So
exactly.
So yeah, absolutely.
Very, very true. And I think Matt did the Jordan fist pump through the glass when I was reported.
I was pumped.
That was great. He jumped like 5 feet. You got hops, man. You
we haven't seen it. Well, I get excited when I hear that Pat Narduzzi is staying. So I mean.
Right. Oh yeah.
I was scared. You could definitely see that happening.
I could too.
If they offered. And Petrino, definitely. Obviously, he's got success there in the past. I mean,
right.
I was going to do the yes chant.
You could do that too. That would be fitting, right? All right. Well, Scott Westerman is the head of the MSU Alumni Association, and him and his staff were in charge of all of the tall task of making sure that Michigan State alum who made the trip to the Rose Bowl were taken care of and received that good old green and white northern hospitality. Now, we caught up with Scott as he addressed this tall order along with so much more.
It all began for us with the Notre Dame loss. And I'll never forget that game because at the halftime of that game, I was on the air with Will Thiemann and we were talking about Connor Cook. And I said at that point in time that Connor Cook's going to get better with every game. And I said we're going to go to the Rose Bowl.
You said that.
Well, you'd expect me to say that because I'm the head servant at the MSU Alumni Association.
Right.
But I was a believer. And so as the momentum progressed, the excitement started to progress.
Right.
What happens at the MSU Alumni Association is we have to prepare for every eventuality. So we had 6 different bowl tours organized, ready to go, depending upon what happened that night in Indianapolis. And so the moment that victory was assured, we turned on the website, and people started to sign up for this tour, and within less than 12 hours, we'd sold out.
In less than 12 hours, you guys completely sold out as far as tickets go.
Yeah, our entire tour inventory was gone in less than 12 hours. And this was even before people knew whether or not they were going to get tickets to the game.
Right.
Because tickets weren't included in the tour.
Right. Had you ever seen a response that quickly, that fast, as comparing to that moment to others you've seen before?
Well, if you think about where we are in history, it has been a quarter century since we've been here. And there are a lot of us who thought we might come in 1988, but figured, we'll wait another year.
Exactly.
And nobody was ever going to make that mistake again. So I think what the Spartan Nation has been thinking about in terms of this Rose Bowl is that this might be a once-in-a-lifetime experience that they're not going to miss.
Scott, you, working with the Alumni Association, you just talked about how you guys plan for every scenario. You guys are ready if they go to this bowl or that bowl or this bowl. I mean, talk about the amount of work. That's a lot of work. I mean, and how do you go about planning for that?
Well, all normal activity stops at University Advancement, which is where the Alumni Association is housed, the minute we know what bowl game we're going to. And the folks in our alumni and donor relations group, which plan the big events, kick into high gear. Our entire alumni team, no matter what they do normally during the year, kicks into bowl mode. And we're focused on trying to create the most amazing experience that a Spartan could ever have in a city like Los Angeles.
I want to ask you, Scott, right now, what do the numbers look like as far as, because I've heard a lot of numbers thrown about it. Many are expecting there to be a sea of green and white at that Rose Bowl Stadium, really, you know, outnumbering the Stanford fans. Do you have any ideas what the numbers look like right now?
Well, my prediction is that we will outnumber the Stanford fans this year. And even if that doesn't happen in sheer numbers, it will in noise, just like it did in Columbus. Because
right.
As you remember, In Columbus, two-thirds of that house was Buckeye red. And our Spartan minority there made so much noise that it was impossible for those guys in the field to hear what was going on when they were calling the plays.
It's unbelievable. Now, Scott, we talk about the me and you chatted about the Biltmore Hotel. I mean, this hotel is really historic when you talk about Los Angeles. A lot of the MSU alum, you know, that are part of the association, they're staying right here in this hotel, right?
We actually have 8 different hotels in the tour.
Okay.
From the Marriott LA Live, where the team's staying, all the way out to hotels by the airport. We got every single hotel we could possibly grab for our tour participants. The Biltmore Hotel is just steeped in history, especially showbiz history, because at one time this was the place where a lot of the Academy Award events actually happened. So where we're standing right now, Henry Fonda could very well have stood in this place. David O. Selznick, Louis B. Mayer, all of the big names of the 30s of the golden age of Hollywood walked through this area at one point in time.
That is really, really cool stuff. It's a beautiful hotel. And also, Scott, I want to hit on what you guys do. As far as the association is concerned with the alumni here, the little, you know, the little perks besides the plane ride and, of course, the game ticket, what other perks do you guys provide for alum who make the trip out here to the Rose Bowl?
Well, people tell us that the greatest perk about taking a tour with us is the customer service. And that's a nice word for buses, because anytime you're going into a place, especially like the Rose Bowl, there's only one way in, one way out, and you do not want to try and find a parking place. So for you to be able to walk out of this hotel, have a bus waiting for you with a police escort that takes you right down the freeway, right to Pasadena in like 15 minutes, and right up to your gate, the Rose Bowl, that in itself is probably worth the price of the tour.
That's unbelievable. Now, Scott, for you, I got to ask you, with all that you guys do, for you personally, what is the hardest aspect of putting this whole thing together? What's the hardest part of your job?
Wow. Stopping. This business tends to attract people that look at it not just as a job, but as a lifestyle. And the biggest thing I worry about with our team is burnout, because especially now, we never stop. I mean, there are people that did not sleep last night because we had stuff we needed to get done for today. And we probably won't slow down until after the last tour participant gets back on that plane to go back to East Lansing.
Unbelievable. It's called dedication right there. For you, Scott, have you had a chance to enjoy L.A. and do anything besides work?
Not this trip.
Not this trip.
Yeah, actually, we have a group of student executives, which are our interns, that actually bought their own plane tickets and their own game tickets and offered to work for us for free out here. Of course, we said, that's not going to happen. We're going to pay you. We're going to pay for your hotel. I took them to Santa Monica Pier because of the 6 young women that are with us. 4 of them had never been to California before. So they saw the end of Route 66 as it juts out there into the Pacific Ocean for the first time. And you get kind of a dad feeling when that happens, when you see the look in their eyes as they're looking at that big old Ferris wheel that was in the movie in 1941.
Yeah.
And they see so many of the things that they've seen as part of the TV shows that they watch and the movies that they've seen. To watch that little magic that's going through their eyes just warms a dad's heart.
That's a remarkable moment, Scott. And you and I were talking before we came down here to do this thing. You know, you've been to L.A. quite a few times. What's your favorite part of this incredible, incredible city?
You know, my favorite part about this place is the Spartans that live here. Because you get it's a general, I guess, attitude that people have about Los Angeles and Hollywood, that it's a dog-eat-dog world. And it's kind of every man for himself, and it's what can you do for me. But when you meet the Hollywood Spartans out here, that Spartans helping Spartan spirit is alive and well. You see it everywhere. You see people hiring Spartans because they went to Michigan State. You see new kids that are newly graduated coming out here that are finding places to live thanks to Spartans who live here. The real magic of what happens in any place, any city where there are Michigan State alumni, is what happens between two Spartans when they get together.
You know, it's so evident, just talking with you now, Scott, that your love for the green and white is so embedded into who you are. Talk about that passion and where, you know, that passion came from.
Well, being a Spartan is something that you choose to be. And with it comes responsibility. It's not just academic performance. It's an ethic that we choose to live. It's the inclusiveness that's part of the Spartan life. It's the community service that's part of the Spartan life. It's taking what we've learned in the classroom and applying it to solve real-world problems as part of the Spartan life. And it's also being a leader. When you decide to be a Spartan, you aspire to want to lead other Spartans to do what we do, and that's to be leaders, lifesavers, and world changers. And the thing that attracts me most to this job is the opportunity to help that movement go forward. Because if you think about the most important reason why Michigan State needs to continue to exist, it's to create more of those folks that go out there and solve the world's toughest problems.
So inspirational. Scott, before I let you go, I want to talk about a moment that you know I'm about to bring up. The skywriting from U of M, the Go Blue skywriting. You had a pretty interesting take when that moment occurred. I want to dive into that a little bit. What were your thoughts when you heard about it?
I was in a taxi cab in the city of Washington, D.C., heading to a scholarship dinner and checking my Facebook feed on my iPhone during the Youngstown State game. And all of a sudden, I started to see Spartans posting these pictures of Go Blue written in the sky. I didn't understand why that was happening, because we're Spartans. Right. It became very clear very quickly that someone had written those words over Spartan Stadium.
Yeah.
And as I watched the commentary, it went from questions like, why would they do that? It's not even the game where we're playing Michigan. When it started to turn to, if they want to play dirty, we'll play dirty too, that I decided we had to do something to change people's thought processes. My wife, Colleen Westerman, is a two-time ovarian cancer survivor, and I happened to look down to my wrist where I wear an ovarian cancer awareness wristband, and I remembered that that was Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month. And I also remembered that Ann Arbor was the home of the Michigan Ovarian Cancer Alliance. So I figured, being a pilot, that it probably cost whoever paid for this thing between $3,000 and $5,000 to do it. So I threw out a comment on every one of those pictures saying, hey, let's really make a difference. Let's see if as Spartans we can donate $5, $10, $50 to Michigan Ovarian Cancer Alliance during Ovarian Cancer Awareness Month and raise the $5,000 that it cost some crazy person to paint that in the sky.
Right.
Well, as the story began to unfold, it turned out that that really got traction with people. It was, I think, a turning point in our Spartan self-esteem, because folks decided that a rivalry wasn't about what we do to tear each other down, but it's about what we can do together to make big changes in the world. And I have a very personal story about that, because Colleen's life was saved by the doctors at the University of Michigan Comprehensive Cancer Center, but her cancer was put into remission by cisplatin, which is a drug that was invented by Dr. Barney Rosenberg at Michigan State University. So I thought, if Michigan and Michigan State could come together to save women's lives who were dying before of cancer, why can't we come together now as two great universities to change Michigan, to bring Michigan back to where it needs to be, into international prominence, and to solve the world's biggest problems together? So that was the essence of my message. By the time all was said and done, we'd raised over $45,000.
$45,000.
We discovered that it was actually the University of Michigan Athletic Department that had paid for that skywriting. So I wrote their athletic director a thank you note, because without his inspiration, we never would have discovered what great magic we can do together.
What a story. That's what being a Spartan is all about.
Wow. $45,000. What a story. What a story. Scott Westerman, the head of the MSU Alumni Association. Okay, it's Wednesday. Barbershop Wednesday, that is. And today, we have a pretty intriguing topic that we're going to talk about. Athletes and politics. Should they get involved? Yeah, you don't want to miss this one. Current Sports returns in just a sec.
A On the next Fresh Air, Russia's anti-gay laws. We talk with Russian journalist Masha Gessen, who just emigrated to New York with her partner and their children to escape those laws. We'll also talk about Pussy Riot, the subject of Gessen's new book. She just interviewed the two members who were recently released from prison as part of Putin's pre-Olympics amnesty. Join us.
That's Fresh Air, coming up at 3 o'clock. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Well, it is Wednesday, folks. One of my favorite times of the week where we get to debate and discuss here. Barbershop Wednesday, that is. Yeah, you know when you're trying to get a fresh fade and you go in the barbershop and everybody wants to argue about who the best NBA player is, who's going to win the Super Bowl, and there's all kinds of arguments go down in the barbershop. And today's argument on today's Current Sports is athletes and politics. Should they get involved? And before we dive into this thing, I want to play a bite for you from the Worm, Dennis Rodman. Dennis Rodman, of course, says he has an interesting relationship with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. And he was on CNN to promote a basketball game in which former NBA players play against the Korean basketball players. So I want you to hear this. It was pretty awkward, disturbing, weird. Just listen to this.
To speak up for the family of Kenneth Bae and to say, let us know why this man is being held, that this is wrong, that he is sick. If you can help, Dennis, will you take the opportunity?
The one thing about politics, Kenneth Bae did one thing. If you understand, I got a guy. If you understand what Kenneth Bae did.
Yeah.
Do you understand what he did?
What did he do? You tell me.
In this country.
You tell me. What did he do?
No. You tell me. You tell me. Why is he held captive?
They haven't released any charges. They haven't released. They haven't released any reason.
Let me do this. I would love to speak on this.
Go ahead.
You know, you got 10 guys here. 10 guys here. They have left their families. Left their damn families to help this country as a sports venture. Got 10 guys, all these guys here. Do anyone understand that?
We do, and we appreciate
Christmas.
That, and we wish them well with cultural exchange.
No. I'm just saying, no, I don't give a what the, I'm gonna rasp what the hell you think. I'm saying to you, look at these guys here. Look at them.
Yeah, but Dennis, don't put it on them. Don't use them as an excuse for the behavior that you're putting on yourself.
They came here.
You just basically were saying that Kenneth Bae did something wrong. We don't even know what the charges are. Don't use these guys as a shield for you, Dennis.
Listen.
Ain't no shield. I got it. Let me do this. Really? I'm going to tell you one thing. People around the world, I'm going to do one thing. Your guy behind the mic right now, we are the guys here doing one thing. We have to go back to America and take the abuse. Do you have to take the abuse? Well, we're going to take. Do you, sir? Let me know.
Well, that was Dennis Rodman on CNN's Chris Cuomo show. That was a weird, awkward interview, to say the least. Dennis Rodman, if you haven't seen that interview, Dennis Rodman was actually with the his teammates for that game against North Korea. His teammates were next to him, and they were sitting in on that interview. And they just all had blank faces and kind of, awkward faces as to what was really going on there. But for those who don't know the history when it comes to Dennis and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. First of all, Kim Jong-un, he's a man with a pretty, pretty interesting history. Doing some research here. He's a man who actually threatened the United States with a, quote, pre-emotive nuclear attack and issued a derailed threat to wipe out an island called Bay Ningyong, the scene of previous naval crashes. Now, I mean, I could go on and on with the history of Jong-un. Now, he actually purged, which means to eliminate the officials who weren't loyal to him when he took over the rule of North Korea. Some of those officials, part of his father's previous reign, and he is considered by many as a brutal dictator who recently praised the execution of his own uncle. Now, I'm looking at the history of this, Rodman and Kim Jong-un, they have a really interesting, weird relationship where they're really, really good friends. Really, really good friends. And Rodman, on this kind of peace movement endeavor that he's on, decided to hold a basketball game in North Korea in which former NBA players play against those of basketball players in North Korea. And they lost a game, I believe, yesterday. And Kenneth Bay, when it was brought up about the Kenneth Bay situation, Kenneth Bay is actually serving 15 years in prison for a conspiracy to overthrow the North Korean government. He is a former, he's actually a U.S. citizen who was captured, was taken in over there after photographs of I believe, children who were, you know, captivated in North Korea were found on an electronic device of his, and he was brought in and they served, gave him 15 years for it, and that's what, you know, Rodman and Chris were arguing about. What this boils down to, guys, our discussion here on Barbershop Wednesday concerns athletes and politics, and those that get involved with politics. Guys, first off, just talking about Dennis Rodman, this whole Dennis Rodman situation. Guys, just my personal opinion, I just think really Dennis is really just a confused man at this point. I don't know if Rodman really knows the extent of this situation and how Americans and the world may view the situation and his relationship with a leader such as Kim Jong-un, who has not had a very, very good history, one that is really looked at as really brutal. You know what I mean? And if you listen to that interview with Dennis, Dennis really just seems kind of just out of it. Maybe he's mumbling a lot. I don't know if he's still, you know, he's a former drug user. I know he's been going to rehab and working on that. It seems as though he seems confused. And it's really a weird relationship here. I don't know. What are your takes on that interview?
I mean, well, the interview, I don't even know what to make of it. And
I can't put it into words.
When you're talking about athletes and politics, Dennis Rodman, as the example, is just as much of a wild card as he was when he was on the court.
Right.
You know, like
right.
you can't really. He's an outlier, either way. Like he's just a.
He's way out there, man.
Everybody's here in a sphere, and he is way out in his own world. But oh boy, as far as you know, what he knows or what he's getting himself into. It's tough to judge because at the same time, would he not be the perfect person for the U.S. to send over as like a, you know, gather intelligence because he comes off as so
friendly.
Know,
he's a friendly guy.
He's friendly, but it doesn't seem like, you know, people would almost take him seriously.
Right.
You know, I feel like he's struggled to have been taken seriously by the public since his playing days, even during his playing days. You know, when you have six different colors in your hair, people kind of look at you like, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he's kind of embodied that. He's been that outcast for decades now. And this is just kind of an extension of that, I feel like. And
I
don't know what he's getting himself into. I don't know if he knows, but
right.
He's going full bore because that's how he does things.
That's
apparently.
Dennis for you. As far as athletes getting involved with politics in general, you know, I was reading a pretty interesting, and I talked to you about this, Matt, before the show. I was reading a pretty interesting article from ESPN on this subject. And, you know, an interesting aspect to this whole thing is we've seen countless athletes get involved with politics and run for mayor and city council and, you know, senator and whatnot. And, you know, Dave Bing being one of those guys in Detroit who was previous mayor of Detroit now. And the article really hit on an interesting point here that I pretty much agree with. When you look at athletes to get involved with politics, first of all, I want to hone in on, you know, what they do on the field or the court. Some of these athletes are really high-profile, prolific athletes. Let's take Dave Bing for an example. He was a great Piston, I thought. Very, very good Piston, an all-star There were a lot of people, you know, a lot of kids, you know, that looked up to him. My dad being one of them. He was a huge Dave Bing fan when he played, you know, my uncle as well. And, you know, something my grandma always told me was that there's two things in this world that people will never agree on, no matter how much you talk about and discuss it. Politics and religion. Those two areas, there's always going to be a gray area where nobody is going to it's impossible for anybody to agree on those two subjects. And I totally agree with that. When you look at athletes and what they do on the court, they're looked at and they become idolized to a degree, you know, especially from the youth. They look at these athletes and they become their heroes. You know what I mean? As time goes on and some of these athletes decide to run for mayor or senate, and, you know, that little kid who's in elementary school or in high school grows up and is able to become a legalized voter, that athlete may be running for a Democratic ticket or a Republican ticket, and it could, you know, politics are taken very, very seriously, very, very seriously. And in many instances, in many regards, If you're grown and looked at this athlete as your hero and now he's running on the party that's opposed to yours, it could totally shift your view and perception of the athlete. And I think when you look at some of these athletes who decide to run for these high-profile political positions, I think that a lot of them are doing it to remain relevant. You know what I mean? And that's something that a lot of athletes, I mean, if you look at even just looking at athletes who get involved with reality TV, you know what I mean? Which I can go, there's a long list of that from T.O. I mean, I could go on and on with that. But a lot of athletes struggle with not being a part of society anymore. You know, some athletes rebel in and say, okay, I'm comfortable with, you know, bowing out, like Michael Jordan. He likes his privacy. But some athletes, you know, struggle to remain relevant in society. But it can shift your perception if you are, you know, you once looked at this athlete as your hero and now he's, you know, trying to get involved with politics because it's so, so sticky. Alex?
Yeah, well, but let's go back to the actual interview with Rodman. I think that his intentions are good. He wants to unite North Korea and the United States athletes together.
I think the world together. I think.
Well, here's where I disagree, because I think that Rodman is trying to create a mini Olympics, but just solely for basketball, almost like a basketball World Olympics. Because, look, if you look at the World Cup and the Olympics, those are the only things through sports that unite the whole – maybe the World Baseball Classic to an extent. But when you talk about sports and reuniting other countries, that's one of the only things you can do. Now, whether his uniting with his intentions of basketball has anything to do with Kenneth Bay and North Korea, it doesn't have anything to do with it. It's solely basketball. But when you're messing with North Korea, like you said, it's another animal. There's more to it than just, oh, I'm going to go over there just solely for basketball. You're going over to a country that, even through United Nations and through many other lobbyist organizations, has been ruled to be very dangerous. So it's not even more of just, oh, I'm just solely going for basketball. He's already entering in a gray area. It's automatically a gray area. Just like politics. Whenever you go into politics, you're going to a gray area. So that's what I think. I just don't think that he can solely go there without garnering any attention.
Is he making himself look idiotic? I think that's what this really boils down to. No, I think he is. He comes off as, you know, I don't know if he's ignorant to the issues that's going on over there and why people don't see it as a favorable position for him to be over there and fraternizing with Kim, you know, Jong-un. I don't know.
I think that maybe he's worried that the Kenneth Bay situation would get in the way of his relationship with Kim Jong-un. Because they're such good friends. And
so weird.
You know, yeah, well.
Well, Alex, really quickly, before weird. We run out of time here, do you agree that athletes, you know, what is your take on athletes?
I agree that they should, because look at anybody else. Look at a journalist. Look at anybody else who goes into politics. They have to come from somewhere. It's from the people. So I have no problem with that. Whether an athlete should go in that's uninformed, absolutely not. But I feel like you just got to take it with a grain of salt, depending on the athlete with politics. And whether it's athletes should totally stay out, I don't think so, because there have been some other great athletes that have gotten involved with politics that have brought some great things to the city. So,
right.
Yeah, that's true. And it is. As far as, you know, getting into politics to stay relevant, that's the wrong reason to do anything. Right. You know, you shouldn't do anything just so you can have your name out there. That's
I think
a terrible
so many athletes
motivation.
Do so many things to do that. You
and
know?
The thing is, you know, that name recognition, you might win. You know, if you put your name in the ring, people know it. they might vote for it. If they're going in being ignorant of all the candidates, they're going to go with the familiar name. If you're a famous athlete who did a lot of good for the city on the court,
right,
maybe you get elected.
Exactly.
And then you're into a whole new world where you have no idea what you're doing. I mean, if you're going to go into politics, you need to know what you're getting into, and both the athletes slash politicians themselves and the voting public needs to separate the athlete from the person, because they're two different things.
Two different things.
It's not like you're going to be draining three-pointers in a congressional meeting. It's not going to happen. You have to know your stuff. You better be a darn good congressman, politician, whatever.
Right.
It doesn't matter what you did in your other job. You know,
exactly.
That has no bearing on your future and your new gig, so...
Right.
If you're going to go into politics, you better know what you're getting into.
I agree. And, you know, athletes who make political stands, Ali, you know, guys who make stands politically, hats off to those guys. Like Ali making that stand in Vietnam, oh, it was great. All right, well, thanks so much for tuning in to Current Sports. We are unfortunately out of time. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKR East Lansing. And WKR FM HD3 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic day. And be easy, people.